I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. And welcome to your safe space for independent thinkers out there. Today we've got a diverse group of topics. The Republican Party is actually moving on something. It is so cute to me when the Republicans in Washington, D.C. are out of power, how they pretend that they want to change things. It's really cute. You know, when they get in power, it doesn't matter what it is, spending or other horrific policies, they stop nothing. Of course, they're not going to get rid of Obamacare. They're not going to get rid of the Department of Education. But when they're out of power, oh, it's so cute. It's so cute to watch them pretend that they're fighting out there for the conservative voters, for the middle class, for the working people in this country. Really, just an aggravating story. But the thing is, there's a lesson in it that if you actually let your elected officials know that you're not happy with something, sometimes they do things about it. The problem is that we just don't pay attention to the things we should, and so we just let so much slide by. So we'll talk about that. Just the Republicans. Oh my gosh. It's so much more fun to look at them as an observer, being outside of the Republican Party, than it was when I was a Kool-Aid drinking Republican. I'd like to see. There are definitely times in my life. I am glad overall that when I was a kid, there were not all of the phones, the phone cameras. I did some dumb things when I was a kid, usually always in an attempt to be funny. I told the story about putting the pencils up my nose when I was a kid. Have I told this story? I'm going to tell it again. I think it was really funny. I'm very big at laughing at myself. The way I always tried to get attention from girls was through humor. Since I was a young kid, third grade, I believe this was, might have been first grade. I can't remember. But you know, one of the funny things you do is you want to make somebody laugh. You put something up your nose. So I remember a particular day sitting at my desk, and I took two pencils and I put them up my nose during class, in the middle of class, to make the girl in front of me laugh. So a couple of people saw me and started kind of giggling. So the girl that I liked in front of me turned around and looked at me, and she started laughing. I had two long pencils sticking out of my nose, and that made me laugh. I thought it was funny too. So I laughed, and when I laughed, my head kind of went down, you know, kind of a jerking motion. At which point the points of the pencils hit my desk and jammed straight up my nose. I still remember the kind of crunching sound, and then suddenly I had two pencils hanging out of my nose that were dripping with blood. It was quite the hit. It really was. It got a good reaction out of the class. It definitely did. But I got on this story. I've completely lost my train of thought. Why I even brought that up? Completely spaced out on it. That's the difference between my 7-year-old self, I guess, and myself currently. But okay, I might have to take a moment here. I tell you what, we'll go ahead and get into quotes of the day here. Totally lost my train of thought. That does not happen here often. I've distracted myself. I'm picturing my young self with my two bloody pencils. Eric Peters is a great writer. You know, I think he's just kind of a freelance guy, just kind of a He makes comments. I guess I need to click through and see what publication he generally does. But anytime I see his name on a byline, I pick up his stuff. He wrote an interesting thing about the masks. I am a student of human nature, mystified by what I am seeing in societies around the world, and particularly here in the United States, mystified by the decisions and the obeyance of so many Americans these days. But he makes an attempt here to explain it. He talks about the masks. He says, what will convince them to take off their holy garment? How do you get your kid away from the Moonies? Once they're in, they are very hard to get out, chiefly because they do not want out. Membership in the cult gives them a sense of belonging and security. Things may many congenitally insecure people crave, and once they find it, they won't willingly give it up, no matter how deranged or perverted. And, you know, that's really what we're seeing. People believe, they've been conditioned through fear, that they are the good people. They're on the good team, and they will not leave that good team. They've surrounded themselves through their bubbles and social media with other people practicing the good team stuff, rolling up their sleeve, slapping on the mask, obeying all the rules. More about that in a minute. And it is very hard to pull people out of that. But he goes on to say this, even if the millions of unbelievers manage to hold the line and persevere their right to not practice the faith, talking about the masks, including most especially their right to refuse the holy anointing, the vaccine, the believers will continue to wear their holy rags, no matter how many times they have rolled up their sleeves, for, like the devil, sickness is everywhere and eternal vigilance is the price of deliverance. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing cult-like behavior here in the United States. Hundreds of millions of Americans practicing it. You know what? One of the saddest developments in conversational English that I have noticed over the past year, it is really, really driving me crazy. Please don't do this, or don't do it when you interact with me. When you leave somebody now, what used to be see you later, have a good day, now is stay safe. Have you noticed this? Bank tellers. And God love them. I'm not mad at them. I guess that's a nice sentiment to somebody. But this is the new ending. Stay safe. Hey, stay safe out there. People say it on the phone. You talk to a phone rep of some company. You order something online. You talk to a representative or anything. All right, great to talk to you. Stay safe. Oh, I think I might start just injecting. All right, live your life. Maybe that should be my sign off. When I go, maybe I'll incorporate it into this radio show. Stay safe is just one of the, I mean, can you imagine the implications of that for your life? Just across the board, if we just decide we need to mitigate all risk out there. Now, there is the parental, be careful. There's a distinction there. One of my best friend's dads, when we were growing up, his parting words of advice to us every time when we went out, particularly once we were driving, and he probably knew there was going to be a beer or two involved in our activities in high school, he would tell us to not put beans in our ears. He was a very, very dry guy, professor at Millsaps. Very funny, very droll. He would tell us not to put beans in your ears. And he would say that to my friend every time we walked out the door. I was like, what is your dad talking about? He said, that's just his way of saying, don't go out and do something stupid. Don't put beans in your ears. I tell my kids that some. I've tried to let that live on. But this idea of stay safe as a parting words is really driving me nuts. I am starting to get some of my quotes of the day from the wisdom of people. I am pretty much against social media. I think it has ripped America apart. I think it is bad. But I got to tell you, some Twitter in its reduction of people's communication to a set number of characters. I don't know. What is it now? 140, 280? I don't know. I don't do Twitter. But in it, you do get some kind of pithy stuff. I ran across this tweet from someone named Megan Alfay, and she said, this is her tweet, you said you needed 2 weeks to ramp up hospital capacity. We gave you almost 2 years. How do you repay us? Creating your own disaster by firing healthcare workers opposing the jab when we called them heroes 18 months ago. If you think the government cares about you, I feel sorry for you. She's exactly right. Exactly right. And then there was this. This is was a business owner. Not sure where he is. He sounds a tad Scottish or Irish. But they have started opening up over there in England and Great Britain with these vaccine passports to go out to eat. Because, again, it's a cult. And this is part of the cult. Only the members are allowed to come in to the establishments, according to the authorities. This business owner wasn't taking it. This guy's a hero.
Wow, I'm a confused man today. I'm happy for small businesses that can open up on the 11th October, including Richey's, but unfortunately we're taking a stance. Richey's is taking a stance not to open up till the 1st of December because we are all about being inclusive. My staff, who I've trained for years and years to welcome everyone with open arms, I don't want my staff to be facing arguments at the front door on why customers can or cannot come in because of their double vaccine passports. So guys, I've made a decision for the organisation. We will not be opening up till the 1st of December until everyone is welcome back in the restaurant, whether they're double vaccinated or not. See you guys soon.
And that would be a restaurant I would go to. It was wildly mystifying to me why in central Mississippi we've not seen more businesses really come out. They should be advertising in WYAB the fact that they do not mask their employees. They are not forcing inoculations. They welcome anybody in their restaurants, masks or unmasked, or any of their other retail businesses. This is a huge marketing opportunity for businesses to get that move message out. But it's great to see people. Anybody who bucks the system in that way gets into my quote of the day thing. And then there was this. Have you heard the saying the revolution will not be televised? I tracked down kind of the origins of this, and it's this song by Gil Scott Heron. Now, he appears to be, this was a civil rights thing. He might have been a Black Panther. I'm not really sure, but it is interesting to listen to his words. This is where the revolution will not be televised got started.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
And it's interesting. I would play the whole song. It's a pretty radical thing. I gotta tell you, at the time, radicalism was warranted in the fight for civil rights, but that's where it comes from. It's just very interesting now when you hear these kinds of old sayings and you see that it's another thing we really understand now. When we see the protests that are going on in New York City as they are marching through Times Square, thousands and thousands of people with American flags, I saw a Don't Tread on Me flag in Times Square in New York City. That's right. That's right. I did that little, clearing my eyes to make sure I knew what I was seeing. Yeah, you had some patriots marching through Times Square. No real coverage in the mainstream media. Australia, France, Germany, England, all of the protest. There are millions of people around the world taking to the street. In Israel now, I talked about this last night in the Kim Wade Show. Israel now has got protests because they got the bait and switch. With the vaccine, they got the roll up your sleeve, be a part of the experiment, get your life back. And now they have actually said after 6 months of your second dose, if you're not dosed again, you go right back into the slave quarters with the rest of the unvaxxed. And the Israelis are saying, whoa, wait a second now. They've got a green pass. They also allowed the green pass to come. This, I would imagine, is electronically based so they can turn off your freedom remotely. Like your gas or your credit. And so they're turning off green passes for everybody who hasn't gone out and gotten their dose again. Imagine those people who had a bad reaction to the vaccine in Israel. And there were a lot of them. There's a documentary out there that I shared with people at the end of last week. I shared the link. Several people emailed me about it. I think it's called Testimonies, something like that. People who were injured by the vaccines in Israel. And now they are facing the fact that they were good little citizens, did exactly what they were told. Now they were injured by the thing, but their green pass is getting cut off. So there is this huge movement, millions of people, including hundreds to dozens that are facing off with these school boards here locally that do not necessarily make them news. They may get a little mention here or there. I think the group needs to get a little bit more better with viral marketing because the masses are coming back to our kids. But this idea of the revolution not being televised has never been more apparent than the last, and really the last few years. The French Yellow Vests were out in the streets for about 2 years, every single weekend. Tens of thousands of these people marching through France. They were already going in a bad direction in France, even before COVID hit. But you didn't hear about that in the mainstream news. You probably only heard it right here on this show in central Mississippi. The revolution will not be televised. That's one of the great things. The last thing they want to do is wake up the world and let you realize if you want to protest, if you want to stand up against what's going on right now, they want you to feel like you're alone. So they can't let you see the huge crowds. I'll be right back. Radio is tweeting at the nation. They say you better listen to the wise of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. So you had better do what you were told. I'm not somebody who has, like, OCD, obsesses about things. That's not really my personality. But I got to tell you, I lost my train of thought there in the first segment. I had to go out there and get the station owner, Matt, to replay the first segment so I could figure out where I was going with my point. What I started to say was I'm glad I didn't grow up with phones and, you know, all of these other things because I would have gotten into a lot of trouble. I would imagine my parents would have had a much more vivid look into what I was up to when I wasn't at home. That I would not have wanted them to see, not to mention how viral things could go. I did a lot of dumb things when I was a kid, many times a vain attempt to try to be funny or to entertain, and I would have hated for some of those things to have just been spread around the school in a nanosecond. The reason I brought it up was that there are times in my life that I would like to see video of. I was in a band in high school, rock band. We played some of the dances. I thought I was so cool. I loved being in front of the crowd. I loved doing those things. Our band was pretty popular within, but you know, I mean, most every high school band is fun to go see when you're in high school. I would love to see just how clueless I was, how awkward I actually was, because my experience was I was basically a blossoming rock star, but I would imagine in my middle age, should I go back and look at video of that, I would realize I was just a stupid 17-year-old kid. It would be kind of funny. But I'd also like to see some video of me maybe having a political debate back in the 1990s when I was a Kool-Aid drinking Republican. I think that would be cute. I knew so little, but I was so sure of myself because Trent Lott told me I was right. It would be so fun to go back and see that. I find that stuff entertaining. It means you grow. And if you can laugh at yourself in years past, I think that's healthy. I'm going to get to the Republican stuff after this next break, but I wanted to mention something really quick. Have you been hearing all this news about John Hinckley over the last couple of days? We're about 40 years past the shooting of Ronald Reagan by John Hinckley. That's one of those moments. I remember exactly where I was. I was coming home from school, and my grandparents were visiting from New Hampshire. And I remember walking in and just kind of offhandedly going, God, what about that? The president getting shot today. And I remember my grandparents going, wait, what? They weren't big TV people. And they clicked on the living room TV and huddled around it as they heard about the news about Ronald Reagan being shot. But what's interesting to me, and I was, you know, Ronald Reagan, I think, he was the original MAGA. Matter of fact, Make America Great Again is not even original. Ronald Reagan was the one that ran on that originally. And Ronald Reagan had some good ideas. He was kind of interesting. He's got some great quotes. He was pithy. He was really good with the media. They hated Ronald Reagan in the media. Yet the people loved him because he was funny. He was self-deprecating. Trump could have learned an awful lot from Ronald Reagan. The contrast between kind of what I see both Trump and Reagan, there's some similarities there. Maybe some good instinct. Ronald Reagan was much more thoughtful, much more intellectual about his opinions on things than Trump. Trump's a branding guy. But Ronald Reagan's style was wildly successful. in the face of a hostile media. Donald Trump's style was wildly effective with his base and nobody else. But Ronald Reagan also grew the government contrary to his words. Very disappointing as I've grown up and understood things that Ronald Reagan really didn't put much of a dent in things that needed to be dented. But my point about talking about this John Hinckley stuff, I just think it is always very interesting to see these kinds of things. We're 40 years past the shooting of Ronald Reagan. John Hinckley spent 3 decades in a mental hospital. He was found not guilty by mental defect. There are theories going around about John Hinckley and basically being programmed to shoot the president. And this was Ronald Reagan's message because he was a change maker. And this was pretty much the message to him. All your ideas about shrinking government and all those things, you might as well forget those now. Or next time we'll finish the job. That, you know, there's suspicions of that. But regardless, it's the interesting treatment of somebody who goes after an elected leader. 40 years later, we're still tracking his every movement. You know, Hinckley is now 66 years old, and I guess he has finally had some restrictions taken off of him. If somebody shoots one of us normies, what are we looking at? 5 years, maybe? A couple of years of probation that may or may not play out, and then, you know, on to the next thing. And it's just really kind of a hell of a thing to me. As somebody who just has basically zero respect for the political class, I don't want to be ruled by anybody. We have allowed an elite to emerge that is treated so differently than us. I'm not saying that Hinckley should have only got... It just seems like it should be equal. Why is any attack... Look at January 6th. Businesses around the country burned to the ground during Black Lives Matter protests. So many of them, there's no individual coverage of very many of them. It's just wholesale burning, looting, destruction of businesses. But a few people walk into the Capitol and sit at Nancy Pelosi's desk and put their feet up on the desk. Now, see, to me, though, this isn't a partisan issue. This is the problem people have. This is, we have set up this ruling class in this country. The founding fathers must be so ashamed of us. But it is this, it always hits me when things like this Hinckley stuff come up, how differently we are treated. It's a tragedy when one of us is shot too. But I can guarantee you there's no 40 years just for an attempted, you know, just for shots. Hinckley didn't kill Reagan. Somebody shoots one of us, they got 5, maybe 10 years, 3 years if there's overcrowding. You know what I mean? It's like our lives are expendable. It's just you know, part of life in the big city when a normie gets shot. But if one of the elites do something, boy, they're on the case. They need to really set an example. And I guess the thinking is, you know, that this is a, you know, they couch this as some kind of an attack on our democracy or, you know, the power of the country, that this, our president is so important. I mean, you know, there's something to be said for that. But at the same time, it's just another human being. Why are some human beings so valuable to society, particularly politicians? Believe me. If one goes down, there's another one ready to take their place. That's all they do is jockey to take each other's place. Now, I'm not espousing any violence towards any politicians. I'm just pointing out the difference between treatment. There was yesterday, somebody egged Macron, the French president, a globalist to be sure, an effete. The dang egg didn't crack. I was very disappointed this morning. I saw the headline yesterday. I watched the video today. The egg bounced right off of his collar. Very, very disappointing. I'm not sure what you do to prep an egg to properly explode upon impact, but let's get the word out. It's kind of embarrassing to see a dud egg thrown at somebody, but it just bounced off Macron's collar. And I was looking at the apprehension of this disgruntled Frenchman who shouted out, "Vive la Révolution!" Because his life has probably been completely destroyed by this tyrant, Emmanuel Macron. But I was looking at the cops who quickly apprehended him and took him down. What will happen to this guy? What would happen to somebody if they threw an egg at me? Maybe a misdemeanor? Possibly a $200 fine and you have to go in front of a court and tell a judge you were just a little irked and then we all go on with our lives? This guy who egged the president of France... There's no telling the amount of time he's going to take because we've created around the world in Western countries that are supposedly, air quotes here in the studio, democracies. We've created this elite that is treated so differently than us. The standards for everything around them are so different, and yet they still get away with calling themselves public servants. I got to look up the meaning of that word servants again. I think I'm missing something. Be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. The Republican Party is there fighting hard against the Biden administration. I just love when they get in the minority. They really get energized about things, tackle issues head on, really fight the good fight, right? And then when they get power, they just keep the status quo. So there's been a lot of consternation around the country in conservative circles about this new proposed bill from Joe Biden, which I also oppose, which is this $600 limit the IRS will start sneaking around in your accounts if any bank account you have has transactions totaling $600 a year, basically meaning every single person's bank account. Well, this is obviously government overreach, so the Republican Party has jumped into action. President Joe Biden's proposal for a radical expansion of IRS monitoring of Americans' bank accounts would be stopped in its tracks under a proposal introduced by two Senate Republicans concerned about protecting privacy rights. Quote, what they've done is they are weaponizing the IRS. They're pushing many, many billions of dollars into that, and they will be hiring tens of thousands of new agents. This is from, according to Senator John Boozman, a Republican from Arkansas. He told the Epoch Times, I'm not a big Epoch Times. I mean, Epoch Times does some good reporting, but I understand the source there. It's the Falun Gong. It's very anti-Chinese. Epoch Times would really like to see a war with China, and so they make me very suspicious for that reason. But this is another one of the two-party political theater things. Epoch Times definitely is going to get it out there. Bozeman goes on to say, or Boozman, so this is all about looking at everybody's transactions and then hoping that perhaps they find something that's not getting reported so they can come after you and get that income. Oh, the Republicans are fighting the good fight, aren't they? The Biden proposal would drop the dollar threshold for all transactions at which federal tax agents would be allowed to examine an individual's private bank account to just $600 from the present $10,000. That's not exactly true. If you've ever heard of a SAR, S-A-R, it's called a suspicious activity report. And it started at $10,000, and then it became more liberalized years ago into anything that's out of the ordinary banking practices of an American citizen. I've mentioned this many times. You sell an old truck or a lawnmower or a zero turn to somebody for $2,300, and you put that cash in your account, SAR, your bank is obligated because you don't normally deposit $2,300 in cash. Your bank is automatically required to fill out a suspicious activity report and file it with the IRS because you put $2,300 unusually in your account. Mike doesn't usually put $2,300. We need to keep our eye on him. This is Boozman goes on to say this, they want this new authority to look at transactions of $600 or more rather than $10,000 or more because they have $3.5 trillion. I don't care about that part. This is the part that I think is important to me. Boozman said the $10,000 threshold was approved decades ago to enable the IRS to assist federal law enforcement efforts against anyone? Drug cartels, terrorist groups, and organized crime rings. See, what this is a huge encroachment on Americans' privacy, of their freedom. But the Republicans were absolutely fine with this $10,000 threshold. Of course, HSBC, one of the largest banks in the world, was laundering so much drug money, cash money, that they specially designed boxes that would slide through teller windows more easily. And somehow they were able to launder billions of dollars, I believe, for the Sinaloa drug cartel. Everybody knew what was going on. The banks make a fortune from laundering drug money. It's one of the reasons the drug war is there. You believe it's to keep you safe. But the Republicans didn't really seem to care when they were snooping on any of your trade. People should be outraged about the $10,000 limit or the $100,000 limit. But see, this is the thing. Republicans are supposedly leaping into action on this thing. And it is a horrendous overreach of government spying on every single American's banking habits. But this has been going on for decades. But now that it's a Democrat president, the Republicans are going to go out and campaign on this. Look at this. We're facing off against Joe Biden. But the Republicans have been absolutely fine with the IRS snooping around in every single thing you do for your entire lifetime. There was at least enough outrage for them to do this. See, and my point is that if Republicans had been smart enough, but you weren't, and the reason was because conservatives and Republicans believed the government when they said, we have to spy on you if you do $10,000 or more in transactions because of drugs and terrorism. In order to keep the American people safe, we've got to spy on people's bank accounts when they do certain transactions that we deem suspicious. And the Republicans went, duh, okay. The IRS has no business, nor does the government, in any of your accounts, in any amount, for any reason. If you are found guilty of a crime, then they could go look at your accounts to prove that crime. But this idea of sending out a big net, trying to put people on the radar of the federal government because they do something within their own bank that just doesn't conform with what this arbitrary $10,000 limit, of course now the $600 limit, it's all overreach. But the war on drugs, the bogus war on drugs, the bogus war on terror is what got seemingly freedom conscious conservatives to stand down and say, oh, OK, we'll let the feds come in and start looking because we want it's these cartels. We got to it's the drug dealers. And here's what you said. I can guarantee you. Here's what you said. I'm not doing anything wrong. So. Well, how you like it now? You're going to do more than $600 transactions in your account? Many of you have deposited over $10,000. You've sold a boat, and you deposited that $10,000. And the IRS gets a little peek at that, puts you on there. Jerry. Yeah, this Jerry guy suddenly has $11,000. This is the same stand down that supposed conservatives and constitutionalists and patriots did on civil asset forfeiture. They told you, oh, we've got to let the police pull over cars. And if you're sitting there with $1,600 in cash in your car in the console, oh, the police will tell you, you don't need to be riding around with $1,600. We're going to take this now. And if you want to, you can come up here in court and prove to us that this was not part of illicit activity. And what did conservatives say? Duh, okay. Now, over the past few years, conservatives have kind of woken up to that. So many stories of abuse of cars confiscated from single moms because their boyfriend got found with a joint at work. So there have been so many abuses of it. Conservatives have finally, over the past few years, woken up to this. But here's the thing. The Republicans have done nothing about this kind of overreach because conservatives haven't demanded at the $10,000 level. This is lefty liberal thinking to go, oh, well, they're just doing that. I don't do $10,000 transactions in my account, so I don't care if they spy on people who do. That's just that rule is just for the rich people. Yeah, they really do need to keep an eye on them. I mean, that's conservatives with lefty thinking going, well, it doesn't affect me, so go ahead and let the government do that kind of stuff. It's like the lefties who say, you know, yeah, they need to tax all the rich people. But conservatives didn't do anything about it at $10,000. They didn't do anything about it when it came down below $10,000 to just be a suspicious activity report. You know why? Because Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh didn't tell you that that was a problem. And this is repeated over and over and over again. We react when it finally gets so egregious. I think they might beat this $600 thing. And you know what you'll have? You'll be right back to the fact that the IRS is noodling around in your accounts all the time anyway, getting copies of every debit and credit card transaction. But what this does show is that when you do actually get upset about something and you let these scumbag politicians know that you're upset about it, they might actually do something about it. But they just They passed this stuff. They did the $10,000 thing. They got a bunch of people to stand down and said, this is the war on drugs. Drugs are just decimating our society. We've got to do complete surveillance over the entire society. We can't keep drugs out of jail, but we do believe we can take them off the streets. You should have pushed back then. These are all teachable moments. If you want to get your country back, you can't let them set these arbitrary limits and then convince you through fear, right? Through fear. It's always through fear. If you don't let us snoop on the accounts, the drug cartels will win. The terrorists will win. We have to take your rights to stop the terrorists, to stop the drug dealers. And conservatives, please stop giving in to this. If there's a terrorist ring or a drug cartel operating, there's lots of evidence out there. They don't have to start with snooping on every single American's bank account to try to find them. There's a lot of other ways to catch drug dealers. Make the cops, make the feds, make them do their work to actually investigate a crime, not send out a huge net over the entire American population to surveil us all to see if they can spot the criminal. We will continue to do this, though. And there are certainly no Republicans calling for the abolition of the IRS, are there? Wonder why that is. Why do you think this freedom-loving, constitutional-loving, patriotic party of the right for fiscal responsibility, why do you think it is that they allow a Soviet-style agency to continue to operate in our federal government? Because conservatives don't care about it. You think you're going to defeat China. You think that China's the existential threat while a third of your wealth is confiscated from you each and every year, every 2 weeks. They take a giant chunk of your wealth while you focus on China and Iran and Nancy Pelosi and AOC. See, this is the great trick. So maybe this is an encouraging sign that conservatives finally got outraged, but it took it all the way down to the $600 a year threshold for Republicans to stand up and say no. That's sad. That's very, very sad. Be right back. And another thing. I tell you what, I get started talking about the IRS and taxes, man. It's on. To any of you out there saying, yeah, that's right, this IRS, it is abusive. I mean, it's an obviously abusive agency to the American people. It's the only place in the country where you were guilty until proven innocent. It turns our entire justice system on its head when it comes to this one agency, surprisingly surrounding money that the politicians control. They decide some different rules for that, right? But to any of you out there who say, yeah, we should get rid of that IRS and just put in a flat tax or a fair tax or a national sales tax, I tell you, please wake up. I have no tolerance for fair tax or flat tax people. I understand the argument. It would be a more fair robbery. It would be a more equitable robbery, but it's still a robbery.
Well, Mike, how are we going to fund the federal government?
The federal government takes in $2 trillion a year. Corporate taxes, excise taxes, tariffs, all kinds of little fines and fees and all these other things they collect. $2 trillion. Live on that, Washington, D.C. I'm very sympathetic to people who talk about fair tax and flat tax stuff because the rules governing our current tax code are so abhorrent, so manipulated to enrich the elites at the expense of the middle class. The middle class is in the bullseye of our tax code. So I know, I understand, but your reaction is to replace it with taking more money out of the middle class pocket and sending it to Washington, D.C., just in a more fair way? Do you really believe that any dollar that is taken out of an American person's pocket that they can spend at businesses or save for their kids' college or to pay cash for a car or pay off a house, you think those dollars taken out of those pockets and sent to Washington, D.C. is positive in any way I'll open up the phone lines next hour because I know there's a lot of fair tax, flat tax people out there. And you and I would probably agree on 99% of other things. But I got to tell you, the idea, that's Stockholm Syndrome to me. You have bought into this idea that the federal government owns part of your income. It's just how we give it to them. I want to be able to give it to them on a postcard. The reaction to an incredibly complex and corrupted income tax system is not just to make the theft easier for us. I mean, I guess if you don't want to go through the rigmarole of having somebody pull a knife on you and get mugged, you could just walk down a city street and just lay your wallet on the curb and not have to go through the whole, you know, scary stuff. But it still is a robbery. When I walk downtown, I just throw a couple of 20s on the curb and nobody comes after me with a knife. They just take the money and go. It's so much more civilized. So anybody who's fair tax, flat tax, on the other side of this hour, you can come on. I've got other topics to cover, but come on the air and tell me where I'm wrong. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. The phone number here, 601-879-0002. I'm going to move on to some other things. I've got stuff I can talk about, but I'm very curious because in a conservative audience, I hear a lot about they think we should replace the IRS with a fair tax or a flat tax instead of getting the feds. My position is get the federal government out of our wallets completely. 100%. Zero federal income taxes. State tax is fine. Local tax is fine. We can vote on these things. I don't like any taxes, but at least I believe there's some constitutionality to those things. So if you want to explain to me why a fair tax or a flat tax should replace the IRS, I'm going to explain to you. I believe you are essentially a slave who wants lighter, that we should replace one taxing authority with a different scheme that still takes money out of Americans' wallets and puts it into the hands of Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. Anyone, anyone. I know you're out there. You must be able to defend it because I've heard a lot of people talk about that. When I bring up stuff like this, that's the first thing. I know we need to go to a flat tax or a fair. Steve Forbes had his flat tax plan. That would be so much better. Why? Not why is it better than the current thing, but why should it be a thing at all? There's so much about taxes people don't understand. Number one, there were no federal income taxes until 1914 when the bankers really kind of made their move and took over. More on that in just a second, too. So you don't realize that. You don't realize that before World War II, almost no Americans, even when they rolled it out, it did just affect a very small portion of the truly wealthies. And then World War II came and they were off to the races. Essentially, you know, everything's a beta test for the government and for the people in charge. They always see what they can get away with. And then I think that they just must look back in amazement and go, oh, my God, they did it. They let us do this. It's the same with masks. It's the same with shots. It's the same with taxes. It's the same with everything. They just do these things, and when there's no they don't know what we're doing, do they? No, they don't. Sweet. And then they just keep doing it. And now I have to battle with Republicans and conservatives, constitutional patriots, who do it in an easier way. So if that's if you're calling with me, I'm not mad at you. There might have been a time that money either. And that's why they don't talk about things like this. If they do, they'll tell you. I mean, for how many years? I don't know. I mean, for how many years have they been talking about us filing our taxes on a postcard? Did anybody do that last year, year before? Is that a thing now? That is like the repeal of Obamacare. I don't know how many campaign cycles you have some politician, particularly Republican, that holds up a postcard. We're going to let you file your taxes on this. It's going to take you 5 minutes. Of course, I'm sure that the CPA and the tax attorney lobby has a lot to say about that. And maybe that's the reason we haven't quite seen that change to the last count, I believe, was 87,000-page tax code. Yeah, you think the Republicans just hadn't gotten around to it or just couldn't get the votes? Or... No, there's a huge lobby to keep... I mean, political allies, politician. They don't want to interrupt that. But the reason that they've never made any substantive changes to the tax code, and the reason they've got you convinced that them cutting 3% is some kind of a victory. Oh, the Trump tax cuts. He cut taxes. A year. What would you do with $9,000 a year over your entire working lives? I did the math. How many generations of family would it take to change your family tree just keeping the money that you send to Uncle Sam? You don't hear that about that on talk radio, do you? I don't know. Maybe it's not appealing. Maybe everybody has got Stockholm Syndrome. I love my tax slavery. I wanted to be a sharecropper. Since the time I sat on my mammy's knee, I wanted to be a sharecropper. Talking about the IRS noodling around dollar limit. They didn't fight the $10,000 limit. They didn't care when they softened the suspicious activity report to under $10,000. But now the $600 limit, they're really going to fight for that. They want to the time. IRS. I mean, think about it. There are a lot of those commercials, right? That means there's a huge market of people. That means the IRS is tangled up with all kinds of Americans for everything from tiny mistakes to not having the money to pay. I mean, there's just a million different reasons. But you just pay attention to all those ads and realize they're not of Americans are caught in the web of this oppressive organization. Do the Republicans do anything about that? No, absolutely they do not. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike, we got to make those corporations and those rich people pay their fair share.
Yeah, that'll...
That's just, they've got to pay their fair share. There is a story, and I don't know if they still got it up, but it was on... Apparently, President Biden is like $500,000 in arrears on taxes from 2017.
Yeah, that's, I mean, of course. I mean,
I'm serious.
Yeah, we've seen.
Only in 2017, after he left the vice presidency, that next year he made like $13 million.
That is so weird.
And got everything, you know, got all of these quote-unquote tax loopholes that Congress helped write and sheltered, and supposedly he owes like $500,000.
And we are talking about a man who is seriously, and I mean this with all literally, he's not qualified to be a greeter at Walmart.
No. In fact, I saw a picture of him dressed in the Walmart greeter, and he's standing there saying, "Hello, welcome to Target."
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, we've seen, I mean, we had Treasury secretaries that get in trouble for the taxes, but those stories, you know, and when we talk about the corporations paying their fair share, I will say, I believe that corporate taxes at least are constitutional. I want them to be absolutely minimal. I would be fine with them being zero. I think the federal government in the United States should be so small, it should be able to get by on $100 million a year. I mean, it should be so small. Now, we do need a military, so that would be something. But as far as the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C., it should be so small that it requires almost no money whatsoever. But at least corporate taxes, I do believe, are constitutional. And it is disgusting that the mom-and-pop shops around the country, many of those who are tangled up with the IRS because there's so many things they have to do to comply, including stealing from their employees to hand it over to the IRS every single pay period, while these businesses struggle and pay high tax rates, that there are the Amazons and the Apples and the big corporations who are in the donor class who do get away with paying nothing in federal income taxes. Not because I want them to pay, but why is it that that we allow our mom and pop shops, why do we allow Main Street to be the whipping boy for the tax code while we let the elites game it, like you say, because they own the politicians who write the tax code?
Yeah, the politicians make it out to hear them talk and explain it about the rich and the corporations not paying tax. They make it sound like they've got these high powered accountants and attorneys that find all these loopholes. No, they're not. They're using the same damn tax laws. Like you said, there's 8,700 pages. 87,000. They use laws that are written in those tax codes to not pay tax.
Right.
Those laws are written by Congress in exchange for hefty donations.
Right. Well, the tax code itself is written by special interests. I mean, it is written by special interest, handed to the Congress critters or to the Treasury or whoever writes it. It's not a law. It's just a series of regulations and rules that they put out a paper pamphlet and tell you that you'll go to prison if you don't do what they say. It's not a law, but they do these things. But yeah, it's all written by these special interests. But you know, I just want to free the American people, and I want to break this Stockholm syndrome of people who think that that it's some kind of an obligation, some kind of a moral obligation. I am so sick and tired of watching particularly conservatives who, when somebody like a Wesley Snipes gets in trouble and goes to jail for taxes, they cheer that. They're like, I paid mine, which is just, to me, it's a girl who went to a frat party and got sexually assaulted. She wants to see the rest of her sorority sisters get sexually assaulted. I got sexually assaulted. You should get sexually assaulted, too. I mean, that is the mind. That's the way I see it. Maybe I'm the one that's insane or off track. But this idea that we want everybody else to pay the penalty for being an American like we do, you know, willingly, that does not impress me at all.
And the worst, I don't know if it's the worst one, but Social Security is nothing but, you know, the government put Bernie Madoff in prison for life,
right,
for doing what Social Security does to you every freaking month.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. At least, you know, yeah, at least Bernie Madoff didn't threaten to put you in a cage if you didn't invest in his Ponzi scheme.
Absolutely. You had free will to invest with him.
Right.
You don't have free will to do Social Security.
You
can't opt out of it unless you're of the donor class, or of the federal employees, or the politicians who don't have to participate in Social Security.
Well, you know what?
Because the rest of us just aren't smart enough to save any money to retire on.
Right, and we might not get that 1.2% interest that Social Security is reputed to earn you. Of course, there's no imputed rate of return. It's just what average beneficiaries get.
But you know, the federal government is fighting. There's so many people out there saying we need a $15 an hour minimum wage. Hell, there's a lot of people on Social Security that work for 40 and 50 years paying into the system that don't get a $15 an hour return.
Yeah, right.
They don't get over $2,000 a month.
Well, it's a mess, but my point for really bringing this up, and it always sends me down this track, because it makes me so angry to watch Americans just lay down like slaves to the system. But this story about Republicans going after the $600 is because, well, number one, Republicans are only doing it for the political theater. If this was a Republican president proposing it, they would pretend it's not happening. They would just let it go through. But because it's Biden, they're pretending that they're opposing him. But the bottom line is it did make its way around conservative media. Conservatives got upset about it. And my message is, if you would really get upset about the big things, not just the little, that we love to tinker around the edges, nibble around the edges of these things. We want to fight them back on this $600 requirement, but we're fine with anything above that because that's what it is right now. It's not just $10,000. They are reporting things to the IRS under $10,000 as well. So we're going to beat back this tiny little ridiculous overreach rule by Joe Biden, but leave the rest of the monstrosity in place because, again, conservative radio doesn't point to the monstrosity. I mean, it's the definition of not being able to see the forest for the trees. We're staring at this one little sapling, this one little tree about this $600 thing, and avoiding the forest of theft that has been going on from the American people for over a century now and doing nothing about that.
Well, the same Republicans that are outraged over this $600 are the same Republicans that come home and tell you that they want to get the federal government out of your life, but they're also the same ones who pushed through the Patriot Act,
right,
and all sorts of other wonderful things that have gotten the federal government more involved in your daily life than you even know.
Yeah.
People are worried about them reporting this to the IRS. Hell, the IRS already knows about all your credit card purchases. They know more about you and me and everybody out there than you can't even imagine.
No.
The information that the federal government has on each one of us.
Right. And it is affecting the family trees of every single American. You know, one of the biggest Republican conservative talking points is, you know, there's a bunch of people that don't even pay any taxes. They shouldn't be allowed to vote or this or that. Like, a bunch of Americans who don't pay taxes, you know what I call that? A good start. You know, I'm not mad at anybody because they're not pulling money. I mean, even the poor people who pay no taxes, they're spending money at businesses. They're getting services. They're doing something in the productive economy with the few dollars that they have. For people to criticize them that they're not giving up money to this black hole that is Washington, D.C., what the hell are Republicans doing complaining about anybody not paying taxes? It's insane. It's just, yeah, again, like I say, I get beaten, so I think everybody should get beaten.
Yeah, they're just not paying into the federal government. They're still paying all their sales taxes and property taxes.
Absolutely,
and,
yes.
And all the other taxes that fund and operate their local communities.
Right, absolutely.
Their schools, yeah, they're paying all of that.
And they're paying corporate taxes, too. Every time they buy a product, they're part of the price of every single product you pay is what the corporation charges so that they can pay their taxes. I mean, everybody, you cannot avoid taxation. The conservatives need to give up this idea that we need to make sure that everybody pays something. You know, to what? To this federal government? What is it that you're getting out of this government that you want to pay in for? They already have $2 trillion sloshing around out there. That was good enough for them in 2007. It should be good enough for them now. Man, I appreciate the call. I got to jump to a break, but I appreciate it. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Stay with me. Be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I?
I was talking to somebody yesterday. I started watching, for the past several weeks, my workout partner had mentioned Frasier, the old TV show with Kelsey Grammer. And so it's on Hulu. I've been watching old Frasier reruns. And I was talking to somebody yesterday. I said, he's a talk show host. He's a psychologist, a call-in station psychologist. In fact, I think I was talking to Cliff last night when here in central Mississippi. Why am I the only conservative talk show host? And I'm not saying others don't. I mean, everybody's got their own thing. We all focus kind of on what arises a passion in us that day. But I've been doing this for about 4.5 years. What is it in the conservative mind? Because I constantly hear things like, I'm a constitutional conservative committed to limited government, all of these kinds of things. What is it in people's minds that make them think that money pulled out of people's pockets, out of the productive economy, and sent into Washington, D.C. in any form, our current tax code, or a fair or flat tax? Why do you subscribe to that? Now, I'm going to assume everybody who does not call says to themselves, well, I don't like it, but I'm scared
to not do it. Well, I don't ever hear even a challenge to a Republican politician to say, can we get this? I mean, just imagine for a moment what would happen in the state of Mississippi economically if you waved a magic wand and suddenly all of that money that went to the federal government no longer went. Now, in Mississippi, we're a welfare state. With that wand would also maybe come, we don't get the money back. Wouldn't it be nice if Mississippi was self-sufficient? See, politicians don't have to unleash the Mississippi economy because they're addicted to Fed bucks. And so we live in a state of dependency here in Mississippi. This is why I tell you, everybody that goes out and says, I don't want to bail out Illinois. They've been irresponsible with their funds, and they're bailing them out. They're bailing out California. I'm not for state bailouts. These blue states don't run themselves right, and we keep bailing them out. And I make the point that's very inconvenient and probably ticks some people off. Mississippi, a supermajority red state, gets bailed out every year for our entire existence of these programs. So I got to tell you, feels a little bit like pot calling kettle. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe Texas. Maybe if you're a Texan, you can point this out. I would imagine Texas probably sends more money to the federal government than it gets back. But for us to sit in judgment of other states getting bailouts, I don't like the bailouts. I think it's abominable. But I say the same thing about our own state, and I realize the fact that we're hypocrites because we get bailed out every single year. It's like normal. We just expect to be underwater. And we've got this legislature, supermajority Republican, that can't figure out a way to reverse that trend. You know why? Because they don't want to. They don't need to. They know those Fed bucks are going to keep coming, so they can keep doing their little smarmy things down at the Capitol and count on Fed bucks coming in. But if you were to imagine a state where we're not dependent on the federal government, number one, and number two, every dollar you earn, you keep. Can you even imagine the businesses that could be created? How much better would the restaurateurs do? How much more less debt would you take on to send your kids to college? How many cars would you pay for with cash? How many extra vacations to improve the quality of your life? All of these things are possible, but we don't even ask for them. We just shrug our shoulders and say, what are you going to do? I don't know who came up with the saying, there's only two things in life that are certain, death and taxes, but I bet you it was a government bureaucrat because they wanted you resigned to the idea that we're always going to take that money. Ain't nothing you can do about that. Again, the first 150 years of this country's history, there was no federal income tax. But people are very ignorant of history. But anyway, I want to play psychologist. I want to hear. I'm listening, as Kelsey Grammer says on that show, as Frazier says. I'm listening. 601-879-0002. If you want to call and explain to me why you believe and accept and do not demand from your elected politicians an end to this confiscation of Americans' wealth, if you want to explain to me why you believe it is completely acceptable, moral, and ethical to strip Americans of their wealth on a yearly basis to fund a government that none of us like. 601-879-0002. I'll be right back. All right, we're back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. If anybody wants to call in and explain to me, I'm doing another one of my things. I call it an invitation. I ask an impossible question to which nobody will call and say, oh, I enjoy paying taxes because I believe Washington, D.C. deserves our money because. But so I guess I should rephrase the question. Why don't you resist this? Why don't you demand of Michael Guest, Roger Wicker, and Cindy Hyde-Smith that they begin rolling back, or not begin, I mean they should slam the door shut on this thing. When the Republicans get control again, they will, because what they do is they switch back and forth between the parties so that you've always got that hope that in 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, you'll get control. Oh, it's the great game, isn't it? It's worked swimmingly for them. Not so well for us. Speaking of them, two heads of the Federal Reserve have now quit. I talked about this a little bit last week. It was discovered that a couple of the Dallas Fed Bank chief CEO and president Robert Kaplan and Boston Fed president Eric Rosengren were trading in their accounts. I think it was Rosengren. They found out he'd made something like over 20 transactions, each over $1 million last year, trading securities in things that the Fed was essentially pumping with their funny money that they print up and put into the economic system. So they've resigned. The funny thing is, this is, you know, like one of the least corrupt things that the Federal Reserve does. And this is what they do. It's kind of like this $600 thing with the tax thing. They'll give you these little things to gnash your teeth about and take action about. And then when that's resolved, see, they'll beat this $600 thing. But so you will forget all about the rest of the intrusive nature of the IRS because you think you would have won. And so these two Fed heads get caught basically front-running the market, making millions and millions of dollars. They're all doing it. It just somehow came out. Well, they've decided to resign, one of them to spend more time with his family, of course. The other one has now just resigned. I wanted you to listen to something. If I can't, you know I talk about the Federal Reserve. It's not sexy stuff. Dan Bongino doesn't talk about it, Mike, so why do you waste our time? Because it has more impact on your life than China ever thought about having in your life. That's a big statement. I know. China's ended up with a lot of our manufacturing jobs, a lot of reasons to not be happy with China, but as far as affecting your life and the life of your children, the Fed is leaps and bounds ahead of any other country, any other external enemy they try to get you to focus on. But this guy, so maybe this will outrage you about the Federal Reserve. Oh, where did he say here? It's a lot of flowery talk. It's been my great honor to serve as the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas for the past 6 years and to work with the superbly talented professionals at the bank who are helping build a stronger economy for all communities in the 11th District and our nation. Anybody looked around at Main Street lately? It also has been my privilege to work with Federal Reserve System colleagues and serve as a member of the FOMC, the Federal Open Markets Committee. That's the little cabal that sets interest rates so that you get nothing on your savings account, but the giant corporations get to pay nothing in interest on the loans they take out. That's the Federal Open Market Committee. But I wanted to get into their social justice. Oh, here we go. One of the other senior Fed officials released a combined statement about the great service of this guy who just got busted front-running. Basically, I mean, it's kind of like imagine you run a $1 billion pension fund and you got a few million dollars yourself and you say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy Apple stock. You get your position in Apple stock at $100 a share and then you make the announcement, my pension fund is going to invest $1 billion into Apple stock. You've already got your money placed in there, right? So the Apple stock shoots to the moon. And your private money rides the tide, baby. And that's what they've been doing, and they will continue to do this. This is nothing new. It didn't just happen. And these guys didn't come out and admit it, that somehow they got caught. I guess there might be an investigative reporter out there somewhere. But the other Fed officials released a combined statement. So if I can't get you angry at the Federal Reserve for what they've done to this country over the last 100 years, how about this? Under Rob's leadership, they call him Rob. Just around the office, he's just Rob. You know, hey, Rob, what you want for lunch? They're just like us. They're just average Joes controlling the entire U.S. economy, lending trillions of dollars to foreign banks, destroying the value of your savings and the dollars you have in your pocket. But his name's just Rob. He's just Rob around. He's Rob from the block. Under Rob's leadership, the Dallas Fed has elevated its role as a convener to bring interested people together to solve problems that are restricting the economic performance of their communities. Rob was also able to accomplish these things by emphasizing talent development at the Dallas Fed with a focus on, everybody ready for this? Maybe this will turn you against the Federal Reserve, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I guess that's progress. That's progress in a formerly segregated society that we have now allowed people of color and all 62 genders to participate in the mass theft of the Americans' financial security? Does it make you feel a little bit better that you know that now gay people are able to destroy your financial future too? I mean, for the longest time, it was only straight white men in suits who were able to destroy Main Street and destroy the value of your savings, make life harder for you, create rising prices. It used to only be white men that could do this, but now we've got people of color. Maybe they've got a transgender or two at the Federal Reserve. It's equal opportunity robbery from the American people. Doesn't that make you feel good? There's a lot of flowery language. It's you know, it's a lot like Hollywood as they all pat themselves on the back. Rob made the decision to retire as president and CEO of the bank effective October 8th to eliminate any distractions to the Federal Reserve System surrounding his personal investment activities. And I would imagine there was probably some thinking with these Fed heads, too. They're like, ah, crap, this has gone public. I mean, I've made a boatload of money, but they're not going to let me do that anymore. So I guess I'll just move back into the private sector. And instead of being a member of the Federal Reserve in front running all of the trades that the Federal Reserve is making, what I'll do is I'll just phone back. Rob now will just be a private citizen. He can just phone back to Jerome at the Federal Reserve and go, hey, Jerome, what you guys planning on investing in next week? I got to set up some positions here. They realized, oh, man, I've plucked this turkey for long enough. Now they're whining about it, so I guess I need to move on and do this from the private sector. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
Hello.
Hey, yeah.
I wanted to call in and tell that I wasn't necessarily had anything to say good about the income tax, but I found something interesting about the Department of Energy.
All right, what you got?
Well, they have a $33.7 billion budget. They have 77,000 employees. They have 93,000 contractors. And I'm not sure I know exactly what it is they do.
Well, I'm sure we have to have that Department of Energy because there's just no way the private sector could figure out how to get oil out of the ground and take it to another place and distill it and put it into gasoline. All of the things that there's a profit motive surrounding, obviously. But for some reason, we need this big bureaucracy of 77,000 people to facilitate these private transactions. How ridiculous is that?
And 93,000 contractors.
Yeah.
So when you total it up, that's over 100,000 people that are working for the Department of Energy. And again, I had a friend that worked for the Department of Energy, and I asked him about that. And his only comment was, well, if I wasn't employed there, somebody else would be.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you almost can't argue that point. But, this is the thing. Federal income taxes, without the Federal Reserve, you get rid of those two things, you can't have 160,000 employees and contractors at the Department of Energy. They wouldn't be able to afford it. See, people fight these battles, but they don't go to the nexus. They don't go to the source of the problem. They try to fight around the edges of little tiny issues at these things, but they don't get to the cause.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, when you bring this up to the people in Congress, you know, the senators and the representatives and whatnot, it really falls on deaf ears.
Of course.
When you call up and complaining about it, they hang the phone up and say, well, there was another kook.
Well, see, this is my problem with conservative media at large, and maybe one of these reasons why it's gotten to a point where I'm almost obsessive. I might get charged under some kind of a radio stalking rules that I talk about Sean Hannity every day. Sean Hannity directs conservatives around by the nose. I mean, he's one of the most popular conservative hosts out there, and a lot of people listening to me love him, and who am I to judge? He makes $20 million a year. But they don't point you to any of the important things. It takes a movement. It takes an awakening. You need a national host. Rush Limbaugh didn't talk about these things either. And so conservative, and that is because they work for the government. Sean Hannity is a stooge for the state and the Republican Party. So are most of these people. And I know I'm being critical and that's probably tacky, but the bottom line is these should be movements within the conservative movement because they're so in your face. I mean, how much more is it a slap in your face than every April 15th to know that you have to give up a ton of your wealth? And if you get it wrong, they may put you in a cage. But we don't talk about it? I mean, how odd is that?
Right. Well, you know, I went back and looked to see when the actual income tax was actually started.
1914.
I heard the date on the radio, and it might have been you that said it was 1913. So I went back and I looked, and they were saying it was only like 5% or less of the people in the country at that point in time were paying into income tax.
Right.
And then it was such a small amount, and it didn't really get cranked up until after World War II.
Right.
To pay for the war effort.
Right. And that's when they realized, oh, they're used to it now. They're used to having this money come out of their checks. We can just keep doing this. And the American people just went, okay.
Right.
You know, and now it's happened for so long. Now everybody's grown up with it. You think it's just a fact of life that you can never change. My only hope on this kind of stuff is, you know, if you had gone in, you know, if somebody had said in 1854, you know, in 10, 12 years, slavery is going to be ended. I mean, slavery had been around in the world for thousands and thousands of years. It still is in some places, but it had been really kind of the norm in countries for thousands and thousands of years. But if you had said in 1855, you know, slavery is going to be abolished here, somebody would have laughed at you and said, no, slavery's always been, always will be. It's been around for thousands of years. But I mean, it did end up ending. And this is the kind of thing with taxes. It's a big thing. Every government taxes. We all expect taxation. We think it's inescapable. We don't like it, but we think it's a fact of life. It doesn't have to be. You know, there's a possibility that maybe people could wake up.
Absolutely. But, you know, the sad part about it is slavery really hasn't ended because we're enslaved to something.
Amen. Amen. We're all sharecroppers, man. I've asked this many times. Tell me what the difference is between sharecropping and income taxes. Essentially,
yeah,
they're
just
saying
call it a different thing. That's all. And,
right.
And then once you call it something else, and it's not that, then the stigma's gone. Right.
Right. Right. I think we need to call a spade. We're all sharecroppers right now. Anyway.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate the call. Got to run to a break, but I appreciate it.
You bet.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Quick break. Right back. All right, final segment for today. I know a lot of what I talk about, particularly when I get to this tax stuff, is so bizarre to people. It's probably like, you know, seeing a spaceship. You don't know what to make of it. People, even conservatives, and this is my great disappointment in conservatives and Republicans, is that it's like there's this kernel of this idea of real freedom, but you don't really want real freedom. We want freedom, but with some limitations by politicians on it. You know, that's things like the drug war or the war on terror. You're so close. So what you listen to on this show is you listen to libertarian ideas, where we don't need Breitbart to tell us what to question. We question the big things. You want to stop problems at the border? You got to turn off the welfare state. You know what powers the welfare state? Taxes and the Federal Reserve that prints money to pay for all that stuff. So you can gnash your teeth, wait another 3 years, try to elect Donald Trump again, see if he gets another 300 miles worth of wall built. Maybe in 16 years you get another 300 miles. I mean, you can do all those things, or you could attack it at the root. You could starve the beast. You know, if you've got a spouse that's overspending, I started to say a wife, and I realized that was sexist. There's some of you men out there spend too much money too. If you've got a spouse that is spending too much money, you don't just every month pick up the bill and go, why did you go to this store? What did you buy? No, you cut off the credit card. You cut it off at the root. You don't try to address every single purchase every single month, and then maybe you win the victory. Oh, you're right, honey. I'll return that. Okay, as long as we have an understanding. And then they just keep spending. Every month you try to bat back. Maybe you get them to return one thing. No, you cut off the credit card. You want to fix illegal immigration? Turn off the welfare state. You want to fix masking in your schools? Schools that have now been exposed as taking millions of dollars from the federal government if they enact full CDC compliance? Cut it off at the source. No Federal Reserve? No income tax? They don't have the money to slosh around to the school districts. Are you getting my point? How many more examples do you want me to give you? It is the linchpin to everything conservatives are upset about. And for some reason, well, no, it's not for some reason. We know the reason. The politicians who rule you, who tell you what to oppose, who keep your eyes just on the one senile old man, Joe Biden,
because they don't want you paying attention. Because they don't want to lose the Federal Reserve that prints up money so they can fight their wars or they can give money to their donor class. That's why I'm not a fighter. I'm not a political fighter on this show pointing out only Democrat problems when I'm here. This is a systemic problem. You want to get rid of the things, you attack it at the source. Luke Skywalker knew this when he went up against the Death Star. They didn't just fly around pot-shotting the outside of the Death Star. Oh, they might have taken out a few guns and messed up a few of the better view apartments on the Death Star, but it wasn't going to fix anything. No, they went and they, at great risk, they went down that little alleyway thing. I like Star Wars. There are definitely more Star Wars nerds than me that explain this better. But, you know, they went down that little trench there and they launched that one bullet that went to the heart of the Death Star. They flew off. Boom, the whole thing's gone. Solved their problems. For a while, you have to be constantly vigilant that they don't rebuild another Death Star. But they went to the source. But I'm telling you, because conservative leadership in this country never even mentions the source because they don't want to. And this is why I think libertarianism as an idea, not as a party, the party's a train wreck. Hopefully that's about to be fixed. But as an idea, you would at least force the Republican Party to become more libertarian. See, libertarians don't fight for who rules over you. They say nobody should rule over you. So I don't have to wait in my mind. I'm not waiting for a savior to come fix everything. I want to strip the power from them, and we'll figure it all out. People for taxes. Well, who's going to make the roads? Do you honestly believe people would just sit around in their houses going, golly, I really would like to go to the grocery store, but there's no flat surfaces for me to drive my car over to get to the... We got to start a government so they can pave a road for us. Is that really what you believe? It's just gotten to the point where these things have got to start happening. People have got to start focusing on the big issues. And it's so easy. It's really probably a handful of institutions. Instead of trying to fight 600 of them each time the news cycle changes, focus on the two or three biggies. You would fix it all. That's all the time I got. I'll see you tomorrow.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.